we are indeed wired to seek out multiple partners to maximize our genes' chances of making it into the future. And orgasm is what activates that part of our wiring. So when we repeatedly have an orgasm with the same partner, what happens is habituation. And this happens with all sorts of stimuli for us all the time, whether it's drugs or anything else. It's essentially building up a tolerance. The same stimulus that you have been encountering no longer releases as much dopamine for you as it used to.
Auxoro is a media platform designed to help you think better, create engaging conversations, and inspire you to live with purpose, aka do dope shit. We host podcasts like the one you're about to listen to, make videos, write articles, and share the work of interesting people. Whether we speak with doctors, designers, athletes, or music artists, we know that this conversation will leave you with a different perspective, and we hope that this conversation inspires you to live a more fulfilling life. If you'd like to keep up with all things Auxoro, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and subscribe to our twice monthly newsletter. In this action-packed email, we send you the latest Auxoro content, as well as articles, podcasts, books, shows, and other content we find exciting and useful. Go to auxoro.com or visit the link in the podcast description to join over 1,000 others who get the newsletter. Also, you can now support Auxoro on Patreon for $2, $5, or $10 per month. On Patreon, you get early access to all podcast episodes, discounts on merchandise, and one Patreon exclusive episode each month. We're an independent platform with no outside investors, and we rely on listeners like you to keep the conversation going. Go to patreon.com/Auxoro to become a patron, and thank you for the support. This time, I sit down with Devin McDermott. He runs the Twitter account at Devin McDermott that focuses on achieving self-improvement through mindset, money, discipline, and habits. We actually connected over Twitter and got to talking about the book Cupid's Poison Arrow, which is the basis of the podcast you're about to listen to. Now, Cupid's Poison Arrow is a book that blends sexual experiences with neuroscience, culminating in a practice called Kareza. While I don't agree with, nor have I tried everything in the book, the topics are definitely worth exploring. So without further ado, please enjoy this deep dive with Devin McDermott on Cupid's Poisoned Arrow. So to introduce the premise of the book, it's called Cupid's Poisoned Arrow by Marnia Robinson. And the practice that's the through line, I guess the lifeblood of this book, is Kareza. And I'm going to introduce Kareza and then, of course, add anything that I'm missing or that you feel is misinterpreted. But she kind of starts off the book by saying, quote, "Our genes are programmed for their own mortality, and they don't politely wait for the opportunity to knock." And so she kind of introduces this whole premise of Kareza by saying that as humans, we're hardwired to reproduce and reproduce with multiple mates to give our offspring the best chance of surviving something like the coronavirus. Like when I was reading that and going back through it, I was like, oh, like, if I had children with five different people with five different gene sets, that would have a higher chance of surviving had I had the same five children with the same woman. So we're wired to reproduce, and we're wired to reproduce with multiple mates, and we're also wired to fall out of love, essentially, and basically become disenchanted with each other. And the main reason for that, she thinks, is orgasm and the traditional form of sex, and then also the way that our society has developed, where we don't really bond like early humans did. We don't touch each other. We're not constantly talking with each other face to face. We have so much technology and social media that kind of takes away the way that our early DNA evolved and wanted us to socialize. And so Kareza is a way to combat the wired falling out of love that so many people and couples seem to fall into. And I'll stop there because I want you to add to that as well.
Yeah. So we are indeed wired to seek out multiple partners to maximize our genes' chances of making it into the future. And orgasm is what activates that part of our wiring. So when we repeatedly have an orgasm with the same partner, what happens is habituation. And this happens with all sorts of stimuli for us all the time, whether it's drugs or anything else. It's essentially building up a tolerance. The same stimulus that you have been encountering no longer releases as much dopamine for you as it used to. And this begins to happen with your partner after you have been with them repeatedly over a long time. And the combination of getting less dopamine from that partner with the dopamine hangover that we will get into shortly here, where for a couple weeks after an orgasm, your dopamine levels are lower and they're erratic, and that can cause changes in your perception of your partner. So you combine that erratic dopamine level with habituation and no longer having honeymoon neurochemicals running through your body after a couple years of being with the same person, and relationships start having problems a couple years in. This is something that we see almost universally. If you observe the people around you, everyone goes through this honeymoon phase where things are all good and they're all happy and they're just coasting along. And a couple years in, the happy couple is not quite as happy anymore.
It's almost like a scientific certainty she talks about in the book. Somewhere between the 2 and 4 year mark, depending on the couple, things start to just break apart.
There starts to be a little bit more emotional distance. The little thing that your partner does that you thought was cute before now starts to bother you. The way that they laugh at this little thing, you used to find it adorable, and now you're like, grr, what's with that? You know, two people that are otherwise really compatible have personalities and desires in life that get along well. People that are perfectly compatible with each other end up drifting apart. And this is something that we see over and over and over in most relationships. So what's happening there? It's human biology.
Exactly. And I guess this would be a good place to introduce what Kareza is and kind of the traditional sex, the mainstream sex, which is orgasm, procreation, people having sex until they come, and that's the goal. Like you want to for a heteronormative view of sex, like the guy's almost always gonna finish, and you're trying to make your partner, girlfriend, wife, whatever, you want to make her come, and like that's your goal of sex. It's like you want to be a good performer. Yeah, you want to be like a good performer, like, and you want to be known as like a good lover, like competent lover, pleasing your partner. And so Marnia comes in and she kind of completely flips that on its head when she introduces Kareza, which when I first heard of it, it sounded like the most boring thing when I was reading through it, because it's this slow style of penetration mixed with these different bonding behaviors that are meant to lead up to the sex. But it's like this very slow, still connection where you're inside another woman and you're kind of just there. And the goal is not to finish to orgasm. And that just seems completely counterintuitive, because like any guy knows the feeling of, you know, blue balls and wanting to finish and like having that urge. And so when I first read that, and to her credit, she says in the book, like, listen, like go through the whole introduction and beginning and middle part of the book before you get to the end. Because if you just go to the end and practice it, like you're going to be wondering why the fuck you're doing this. Like, what's the point? So she does say that in the book. And so it encourages you to go through it. But when I first heard about Kareza, just like not coming during sex, I was like, what the fuck? Like what would be the point of this? How does one feel satisfied from just slow penetration that does not culminate in orgasm?
Right. Yeah. And that's a big question that I think most people will struggle with when they first hear about concept of non-orgasmic sex. And why would you even bother? Again, it's because of what happens with the dopamine reward system and the distance that starts to appear between partners over time, and non-orgasmic sex as a way that you can circumvent that. So a useful way that Marnia distinguishes between our two different pedals, if you will, that drive our intimate relationships. One of them is called the mating program, and the other one is the bonding program. And these are two different halves of the same intimate capability. Or how do I put that?
The mating program versus the harmony pedal, like the habituation versus harmony kind of thing?
So mating is what most people go for. It's what our entire sexual system is based around, is just mating and getting your genes off into the future. However, that is not what serves us best in a relationship where long-term monogamy and harmony is the goal. That is what serves us best for the goal of getting our genes into the future. But we live in a world where, in a society where people want long-term harmonious monogamy with one another. And it's very hard to accomplish that if you're not aware of the way that our biology works and our biology will work against you. Kareza is the harmony pedal. It's based on oxytocin and bonding. And that is really how it can be a satisfying experience to not have orgasms with your sex, is you're focusing on bonding with the other person more than you are on just getting pleasure out of it, right? And it's really pleasurable too. It feels absolutely amazing, but the focus is just different. You're focusing on bonding as much as you possibly can. You're not trying to get something out of the other person. It's not performance based.
Yeah, I forget exactly what it is, but there's a line in the book that goes something like, with normal sex, with orgasm sex, your goal is to get something from that person. Like you see the end goal in mind, and with Kareza, your goal is that person. Like you just want to be with that person. You're not trying to take something from them. And she actually does give a definition of Kareza earlier on in the book that I feel like would be good to mention. She says that Kareza eases sexual tension with gentle intercourse mingled with deep relaxation and lots of soothing affection, leading to refreshing feelings of satisfaction and lingering equilibrium. And the equilibrium part, I think, is important because, and we actually talked about this before the podcast, but because of reading this book, I experimented by making myself go without orgasm for a few weeks. And since I started jerking off, like, what, I'm 26 now, so 13, 14 years ago, I don't think I've went a week without it, honestly. Like, I started off in a frenzy, like kept it going, and it's just been a constant state in my life.
I would say most people are right there with you too.
Yeah, and then probably around 4 to 6 months ago, I quit porn, but I was still jerking off, and I never went a period of probably like 2 to 3 days in recent memory where I just didn't orgasm. And so I stopped and had the experience kind of similar to the meditation and the intermittent fasting, where I was having an urge to do something, which was to jerk off, to have an orgasm, and I didn't do that. And so I did feel this extra energy, like and I don't want to make it seem like it's like this magic pill where like not feeding into your sexual urges right away, like, just, you know, it's like you see God or like this golden light shines down upon you. But I definitely did have some extra sexual energy that I could use in creative tasks. And so I had the experience of, you know, okay, I'm having this urge right now, instead of jerking off, I'm going to go, you know, work on a podcast or go record or go work out or walk outside. And we're recording this for those who are listening to it in the future during the whole coronavirus outbreak. And we're in quarantine right now. I'm in Brooklyn. I'm not really leaving my apartment, so my options are limited. But I was putting that energy into other things. And I think that's a huge through line through the book. Just beyond the urge of orgasm, just urges in general from our mammalian brain, for our primal urges. If you can avoid those with your rational brain, it seems like that brings more long-term fulfillment than just giving into them right away.
Yeah, I would agree. A lot of it does have to do with that kind of energy that you were talking about. I remember there's one passage in the book where Marnia talks about how when you stop having performance-based sex and you stop trying to get orgasms out of sex and you are instead retaining your that energy, if you will, it allows you to start making love to life in a better way. Instead of making love just physically with a person, you're making love with life in everything that you do. And I think that is a nice little ode to semen retention that she put in there, which I also don't want to make it sound like it's some superpower or magic pill or something, but I guarantee you that if you don't bust a nut for an extended time, you're going to feel way more energy coursing through your body. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of our natural state. It's not that you're unlocking some superpowers or something. You're just returning to our natural energetic potential, which is really fucking high when you're not when you're not releasing it on a regular basis. So it's kind of the whole premise of sexual transmutation is what mankind has been doing for a long time, and that's taking sexual energy, taking that urge to find a partner, to be able to provide, and putting it into something non-sexual so that you increase your status as a person and become a more worthwhile mate yourself and can attract those mates. This is what our sexual programming is for. In particular, as men, we need to become ones who can provide and ones who can provide safety and resources.
Yeah, I think this would also be a good time to clarify where we are in the Kareza experimentation process, just each of us personally. So I've never practiced Kareza yet. I did the experiment withholding from orgasm, and I've read the book. So I would say at this point, I see the value in Kareza, but I haven't personally experienced with it yet. And then the changes in my life that I'm making right now is that I will cut down on orgasms. I actually wrote on my whiteboard, like, try not to have orgasms more than 2 times a month. So I'm going to try to stick to that, like once every 2 weeks, just to see how it goes. Cause like, I really did feel benefit from just not giving in to that urge constantly. And I should also note that I had decently good habits beforehand. So I worked out every day. I meditated every day. You know, I get outside. Like, I wouldn't say I was someone that was struggling with addiction or was depressed in any way. So I know that a lot of people, when they stop watching porn or they stop jerking off, they may habit stack. So the effect will seem greater than what I'm saying, because maybe they stop watching porn and then they like get into meditation and they start working out. So like, they stack good habits on top of each other. And so that one switch kind of led to a greater change in their life. I would say for the most part, you know, I'm not perfect by any means, like not by the most wild stretch of the imagination, but I already had decently good habits. So I was feeling relatively good energy before. And then I kind of felt like the brightness turned up a little bit from withholding from orgasms. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm willing to cut back on orgasms, limit it to once or twice a month. And I'm open to experimenting with a future partner using Kareza. Like, I would love to try that out. It sounds like something that I would be into.
So I'm right there with you. I've practiced a little bit, experimented with a partner who was willing and curious, but we never got to experiment with it over a long period of time, which is what I would have really liked. But it was absolutely some very satisfying experiences. The best sex I've ever had in my life involved no orgasms.
Are you good getting into some of those details? Like no names or anything, but are you good kind of like going into how you brought it up and, you know, what kind of like the process was like of introducing that into your sex life?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have a problem with it at all. It's not like graceful or anything necessarily.
I guess that would be a good starting point. Like, how did you even bring it up with your partner? Like, how did you present it as an idea where she was then willing to try it?
Well, this kind of ties into what you were talking about with having decent habits and you were already feeling pretty good. For me, it was the opposite. For me, I was addicted to internet porn and doing the dirty every day for over a decade. And that caused all sorts of addiction-related brain changes in my dopamine reward system, down-regulating the amount of dopamine receptors in the brain, down-regulating androgen receptors, which reduces the effect of testosterone in your body. Oh, and also hypofrontality, which is less blood flow to the executive functioning part of your brain. So worse self-control, more impulsiveness. All these things that happen with somebody who's addicted to cocaine were happening to me just because of internet porn. So when I removed that from my life, when I started to retain and allow my dopamine and androgen receptors to upregulate and go back to normal, the change that I saw in my life was absolutely massive. The shift in my energy on a day-to-day basis was night and day. And that's kind of, I was going through that whole deal of quitting porn and retaining my semen and feeling the energetic benefits of that and developing a bunch of healthy habits when I met my ex. And it didn't really take all that long for me to just at some point be like, I have been working on cleaning up my act sexually, and I have been getting a lot of benefits from not busting nuts, and I really don't want to on a regular basis. And there's something I've learned about in recent times that makes that very possible. And I'm very interested to see what it would be like experimenting with this different way of having sex. Now, she was pretty open-minded. She's like, well, I've had sex in all the other ways. So
yeah. And you're just like, wait, what other ways?
why not? Yeah, why not try this one out? Yeah, wait. Tell me more. No.
Yeah. You had read Cupid's Poisoned Arrow at this point?
Yes. Yes. I had read it, and it was really beneficial for quitting porn and all that too, to be honest. So I brought it up with her, and she seemed kind of intrigued, but naturally same reaction as most people would, like you're not gonna bust nuts, like what?
Yeah.
And so then I flipped back to the section of the book that is all about how do I introduce this to people, and I just kind of went through some of the basics with her, and she's like, that actually makes a lot of sense, and I can observe those patterns in my relationships and in other people's relationships, that those patterns of habituation and getting tired of your partner. So yeah, she was intrigued, and we ended up giving it a go. It was actually on quite a few occasions gave it a go. My experience with it was that it's hard to resist that habitual programming. You want to go faster. You want to perform as we've been trained to. And it's really hard to pull back and slow down. And you'll stop and you'll slow down, do good for a little bit, and then you'll just naturally end up wanting to get back into it and start getting a little too frisky. So it is a huge exercise in self-control and willpower, discipline.
That was something I was thinking about when I was reading through the book, is there's such a primal urge in us to kind of just like want to fuck like wild men. Like everyone wants to be that guy that comes in, you know, literally picks the girl up, throws her down on the bed, just pile drives the shit out of her. Like she comes 19 times and you last for whatever, 30, 45 minutes and you're just an absolute stud. Like that's something that a lot of guys want to be seen as and want to perform as in their life and in their sex life.
That's what we've been trained for as well through pornography and society's sexual teachings in general. That's what it is to be sexually successful in our society, is to be that guy who comes in and fucks like an animal and makes her come 19 times and all that.
So what do you do? I guess we should start pre-penetration. What do you do to get ready to get into that mindset where you tell yourself like, all right, this is not going to be about trying to perform, trying to make her come 19 times, like fucking like a wild man, whatever. Like, how do you kind of get yourself in that mindset before you even, you know, pull the trigger, clothes start coming off, things like that?
I don't think I ever got good enough at that one, to be honest.
I mean, it's fucking hard. Like I've never even done it yet. And like, I can't imagine trying to do that.
I think one of the biggest things that made it easier for me is that I legitimately, the higher part of my brain does not want to bust nuts at all anymore. Mm-hmm. My highest version of myself knows that I will benefit energetically, massively, from not doing that shit. Mm-hmm. And the mammalian part of my brain still wants to sometimes. So they're kind of at odds. But going into every experience where we wanted to experiment with Kareza, I really, really didn't want to bust because I knew my energy level would go from here to there. And then next time, you know, if it's like the next day, it's going to go from here to there. And, you know, I'm losing a bit of energy every time I bust a nut. And that's just not something I want. So that made it a lot easier. That, and she was very hard to make orgasm. So she was already kind of intrigued with the...
I know the feeling.
Yeah. It didn't bother me, you know, went into it knowing that. Mm. But that also made her even more intrigued with the idea of not neither person having that goal, right? Because it already wasn't really her goal. It was already, bonding was her goal. And so I was on the same page. I'm like, this is about bonding to me. It's not about just straight pleasure. That said, it was pretty awesome.
Okay, so getting into a little bit of the dirty details. In the book, she has accounts from people that talk about what Kareza is like, and some of them are talking about basically just chilling there inside your partner and not really moving in these resting periods. And then some other accounts describe it as more of like a slow thrusting, not focused on friction, but more just like deep penetration, like feeling it. How did you guys approach it when you did it for the first few times?
Slow movement is really it. Slow movement, and then when you get too heated up, you slow down. And if you're really that heated up, then you just stop and you just sit there and just kind of hang out, you know?
So there were breaks, like there were defined breaks where you would say, I got to chill a little bit, and you would pull out and you'd just like kind of chill there and then go back at it, try it again.
Not even pull out.
Just like sit there, just stop, yeah, basically.
Just chill there, cool down a little bit.
What were the go-to positions of Kareza? Because obviously some of the more go-to sex positions would not be useful for this, like doggy style, for example. Like I imagine that's not good for Kareza. What were the positions that you guys used?
So just like kind of regular cuddling position is pretty decent, but
like spooning.
Yeah. The best one, in my opinion, was having your legs like kind of scissored together or whatever in a way where you're looking at each other, you know, you're facing towards each other.
Okay. So is it kind of like you're perpendicular to each other, or how does that work kind of? show me on the doll where she touched it.
Yeah. So you're facing towards each other and got.
Oh,
your
you're
legs.
Facing towards each other. Okay.
Yeah. With your legs, like kind of like that. You know.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that one worked really well because your hands, like you're able to touch each other, you're able to hold eye contact, you can have conversation, whatever. I like that the best. Eye contact and touch and all that is a big part of bonding as well. So it's just that one felt the most natural. But I also, I'm sure there's a dozen other things that could have tried that didn't even get to, right? So I am still fairly inexperienced with it myself.
So I guess this would be a good way to put it. So the payoff for normal sex is the orgasm and hopefully your partner orgasms too. And that's like the good feeling of like, like that was a great session. For Kareza, what is the payoff of it? If you're not orgasming, like what does the payoff feel like? And at what point in the process did that payoff usually happen, if it did happen? And it may have been at different times. So
the payoff, I would say, is two different things. First of all, you're still getting a really, really enjoyable experience and sensation out of it. Marnia makes the example of a balloon filled with air, right? And an orgasm is taking a needle and popping the balloon. Boom, there it goes, all at once. Whereas Kareza is filling that balloon up and then pinching it at the bottom and slowly releasing a little bit of air over an extended time. So that balloon is going to be deflating all day long. The next 24 hours, you're going to have this nice energetic glow to you. You just feel good. So that is the payoff of it. Like you're still, it's still like the pleasure of an orgasm. It's just drawn out and extended over time. So it's not as explosive right now. The other payoff is bonding. You know, so this is something that you would want to practice with someone that you're really serious about. It's not something to practice with someone that you're just kind of have a fling with or whatever. I guess you could, if you're curious.
That's a hard sell for a one night stand. Hey, do you want to come back to my place and just not come?
we'll just lie there slowly. Open-minded hippie chick or something, you know?
Maybe you just have like the most tantric one night stand of all time. That could be a possibility too. Turns into the morning.
Shit, man. The girl who first introduced me to tantric sex, which Kareza is pretty related to tantric sex. It's that is a little different. But the girl who first introduced me to that stuff was someone who I was only with for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny looking back on it. She started me down a path that then led to Cupid's Poisoned Arrow and Kareza and all that.
She was your sensei, your tantric sensei.
She gave me a book all about it. And all I read back then was maybe 10 or 15 pages. And I got enough out of it that I was like, huh, interesting. And then all these years later, I found Cupid's Poisoned Arrow, read through it, and was like, that other book was talking about this kind of shit too.
Yeah, there's something here. So what time of day would you try it? Was there any type of day that felt better in particular? Because as I'm reading the book and kind of like imagining, okay, if I was going to do this, how would I actually practically set it up? I was thinking to myself that I would have to do this in the morning. There's no way that if I'm trying to fall asleep and I'm introducing this into my life for the first, you know, few times, first few months, that I can just be inside a girl, have that build up, and then lights out, go to bed just with a raging boner and not feel like on edge. My thinking was, all right, I should probably try this in the morning if she's open to it. And then I take cold showers in the morning, which is perfect. So then just like hop into a cold shower and then just go about my day, like take that energy into the day. Did you have any sort of time of the day that you felt like was better for you early on?
I definitely agree that the morning is a good time to do it, just because it's that whole balloon analogy again. If you fill up that balloon at the start of your day, then the whole day you just mm-hmm. kind of got that glow with you. So I think that is the most beneficial time to do it as well. But that said, at night would be fine too. You shouldn't be going to bed with a raging boner or anything. You give it a good little bit of time of enjoying each other's company in that way. And you'll end up satisfied. You're not going to feel like you're leaving something on the table. That's a very important thing to note about it too. Definitely. Is like a lot of people, you feel like if you don't come, like you're leaving something on the table. And it's really not the case. You will reach the end of a session of Kareza and be satisfied.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You won't feel like you want more or whatever. I mean, you might because you're a filthy little animal, but you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, seriously, like it's hard not to just be lying in bed with a woman and go to sleep without thinking about sex or just wanting to come. It's like such a routine thing where it's, you know, orgasm, go to bed. That's because that's like, that's also one of the things in the book that registered with me is how we use orgasms to medicate ourselves. And then that was even clearer to me when I went 2-3 weeks without doing it. And I realized that I'd always hit a point of like buildup. And then to get rid of that buildup, I would just go jerk off or have sex. And I didn't realize that it was kind of, I was kind of just like medicating myself in some ways, like medication that I would take for a physical ailment or disease or something like that. Like it was kind of like a medication for an anxiety or a distraction for a problem where if like I want to avoid work, I'm going to go jerk off, or like I'm feeling anxious about a meeting or a podcast, I'm going to go jerk off, like have 15 minutes free or 2 minutes free, I'm going to go jerk off, like just like something to do. And
it's a powerful medication mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, because it, no matter what state you are in, you can go and jerk off and you're going to feel great. You could be anxious, sad, trying to procrastinate, angry, whatever it is, like whatever you're feeling, you go and jerk off. You're not feeling that way anymore. Your brain's getting flooded with dopamine. So it's very easy to medicate yourself with it. People do this all the time.
So something I wanted to ask you is, how do you know when you're done? Because if you're not going to orgasm, that's typically, you know, the money shot, I guess, if you're going by porno, that's like the typical end of a sexual encounter, is that the guy comes and that's it. And you go to bed or you wait and then you do it again. What was your signal that you knew it was time to stop and that she knew too?
I wouldn't say that there's necessarily a hard signal, perhaps a soft one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Sorry, puns. But that is kind of the truth of it, though, is at some point, you're just not going to be as aroused as you were. And you'll just kind of know, like, you know, I'm good. That might be after 20, 30 minutes. If you want to, you can keep on going, though. Shit. Longest we went was hours. So
there's kind of like a natural subsiding of the arousal, not just like a finish line, more like kind of winding down.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. Yeah, it's a natural subsiding of the impulse. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. You end up quite satisfied by the end.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. I was like, how would I know when to stop or when she wants to stop? And that makes sense that there's kind of like a mutual subsiding to it.
And it's very satisfying to not end up with that, I'm done mm-hmm. feeling. Because I personally still felt way more connected to my partner after the fact.
You would notice that the behaviors were different, the way that you treated each other and interacted with each other. You could tell the difference between when you were going to orgasm and when you were doing Kareza.
Yeah. Yeah. Post, after having sex, I felt way more connected without orgasm and, you know, it'd be very like touchy feely and just well connected. Whereas after orgasm, you kind of lose your fire and you're just like, all right, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we all know how that feels.
Turn over and go to bed.
And I also noticed Marnia talks about hungry hands, having your touches to your partner be more lustful, you know, more goal-oriented, like you're trying to get something out of them. And I noticed, both my partner and I noticed that after I had an orgasm, after I had a couple, then I ended up naturally returning to that like kind of hungry hand sort of thing, where my touches were, they were less innocent. They were a little bit more goal-oriented, a little bit more sexual. And yeah, we both noticed that. We both could feel that. I like the way that I interact in a relationship better when I'm avoiding orgasm.
Did you feel any of the internal orgasms that some of the people mentioned in the book? Like it wasn't this release of energy, but they felt like an energy coming up into their body, almost like this, some people described it as better than the typical orgasm we think of. Did you feel any of that golden light stuff that gets mentioned in the book?
I didn't experience anything like that yet, but I have also had a rather limited range of experience so far.
Gotcha.
I don't know that we ever fully did it right either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that'll take some practice and discipline between two people that are on the same page to really get it down, and just didn't have that kind of time.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm kind of more aware of now, having introduced some other habits into my life that suck at the beginning, or you just don't see a return initially. Like meditation is a good one, where you may just feel like you're wasting your time for 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day for the first month or two. And then all of a sudden, like little things start to shift in your life where you gradually make more space between the stimulus and your reaction. Like maybe you just notice, oh, I paused an extra second there in that conversation to actually listen to someone, or I didn't do a knee-jerk reaction to an insult. And so going into Kareza, I'll try to remind myself that I may not see any benefits for, you know, maybe months, but at least a month just practicing it. And it's not going to be like this switch that I expected earlier on in my life when I made habit shifts.
I think it's important to say here that this is not about Kareza being the only way.
Yeah.
And if you have orgasms, it's a horrible idea.
Yeah.
Like, if you're interested in this stuff and you want to experiment with it, you're going to want to experiment with your partner and go 3-4 weeks of doing Kareza and seeing what that feels like, and then go back to orgasmic sex and see what that 2-week dopamine hangover feels like in your relationship after you've experimented with Kareza for a little while, so you can compare them and do that a little bit over time. Go back and forth for a little while, and you'll end up figuring out a balance of how much mating behavior and how much bonding behavior is right for you in your relationship. There's no one size fits all with this.
Yeah, that's kind of how I wanted to approach it whenever that is with my future partner, doing different phases of different styles of sex, like orgasm for 4 weeks, Kareza for 4 weeks, see if we notice a difference. And like you said, I also want to make it clear that this isn't for everyone. I'm not speaking for everyone when I'm talking about the things that have worked for me, and I haven't even tried it yet. This is kind of just like, I'm just super interested in this topic, and this book was pretty eye-opening to me in terms of the information, and did lead to great self-experimentation. But I do think that it's important to experiment and figure out what's right for you. And I'm a big advocate of moderation for myself, for the things that I can handle. And I tend to stray away from absolutism. So when I read about not having any orgasms for years for some of the people that were giving testimonials in the book, I just know myself, like, one, I don't think I would be able to do that. And
a little extreme for you.
Yeah. And two, the absolutist mindset, I'm not sold on if that's better than having orgasms every once in a while or like a couple times a month. I do think that there are benefits to orgasms if you're doing it in a way where you're not medicating yourself. I kind of, not to go back to the fasting too much, but like when you're intermittent fasting, you go without food and you're not a slave to your appetite. So you eat when you're ready to eat. You're on a set eating window, and that's how you know when to eat. It's not just I'm hungry and I eat. And so something that I'm looking forward to with orgasm is saying, okay, I'm going to give myself a certain window every month where, you know, maybe I'll jerk off on the 1st and the 15th, like in that Gucci Mane song, the 1st and the 15th. But I'm looking forward to restricting it to kind of like a time slot rather than I want to come right now. I'm going to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's an awesome exercise and discipline, just like with intermittent fasting too. And it definitely, having done that with my ex, it does feel good to kind of restrict it and make it a more special thing when it does happen. A little bit of an absolutist when it comes to semen retention at this point, at least for me personally, just because I recognize through a lot of learning and this book and so many other places that our semen is our life force energy. And the more we retain it, the longer we retain it, the more that energy is just recycled into our being and can be used for whatever we want. So geniuses, so many big names like Nikola Tesla, Einstein, tons and tons of people in the world have retained their semen for long periods of time, specifically to build up that energy inside of them and then direct it into their business and their relationships and their goals. You know, so that for me is the apex of sexual self-mastery that I am working towards in my own life, is making it so that almost all of my sexual energy is being directed into my goals. Now I
gotcha.
still do want intimate relationships, so some of it will be directed in that way, but a vast majority will go towards my goals. And the highest level of it is when you're someone like Nikola Tesla, who was just straight abstinent for his entire life. And he just took all of that energy that was building up in him and directed it into his work, into his inventions. And shit, we know Nikola Tesla specifically. He came up with inventions that were so crazy that they were intervened by the government and
he was
shut
kind of
down.
Smart.
Yeah. This dude was tapped into something else.
He was reincarnated as Elon Musk and then named a company after himself.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's like a Reddit, probably out there at some Reddit sub theory. Something else I wanted to ask you is, what did you do about foreplay? Did you just cut that out completely? Did you try to put your own Careza spin on it? Like what did you do when it came to foreplay?
It was really just like cuddling and kissing and whatnot. Nothing too crazy. I mean, blowjob that's not too intense works pretty well too. As long as they're not going too hard, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It can be hard to put on the brakes when you get to a certain point.
Yeah, and your partner has to be willing to put on the brakes too. It's definitely a big part of it. Women have that natural kind of seductiveness where they want to get you going. They want to draw things to a finish. Inherently, that's part of their mating program. So they got to be pumping the brakes. You got to be pumping the brakes. Everyone's got to be on the same page.
One of the things that I thought was actually kind of funny, and it made me think in the book, was the evolutionary roots of what society considers sluttiness for a woman and being a stud for a man is sleeping with a lot of different people. And it's an unfair double standard, I think, but just separate from the moral implications, whatever you may think of sleeping with a lot of people, in the book, she talks about how when early humans didn't know that you just got pregnant from one person, the one, you know, little floating semen would impregnate you. And then after that, it's not adding to the baby. Early humans didn't know that. They thought like when a woman was pregnant and they would have sex with multiple, the same woman would have sex with multiple guys, that that was somehow like adding a life force to the baby. And there was almost like this group father mentality. And also they didn't know who the father was, even if they did know that it's just one semen fertilizing the egg. So it was like this evolutionary reflex.
It's an interesting part. Yeah, it's
like an evolutionary reflex to get more guys to help you with your pregnancy. Is that if you slept with five different guys while you were pregnant and all five of them felt this fatherly bond, like that could be my kid. Then while a woman was vulnerable and pregnant and couldn't defend herself from predators, and she would have five dudes looking after her. And so then that those genes would be more likely to be passed on. So the women who we consider sluts today, their DNA was more likely to be passed on because they would have more guys protecting them. That was fascinating.
Yeah, that's really cool. You brought that back up. I forgot about that part of the book, but definitely an interesting take on how old sexual programming served the genes of or served the progression of our genealogy. But nowadays, that takes on a little bit of a different form and is frowned upon by society, at least with women. Honestly, though, I do think that just having a bunch of casual sex, I don't think that's a healthy thing for either gender necessarily. And
yeah,
that conclusion comes from seeing lots of people who have a body count over 100 who are like, I feel like something inside of me has died a little bit. You know?
Yeah, no.
And,
no,
I've heard that almost universally among guys who have been around a lot.
I totally get that. It makes me think back to when I was in college, and I definitely had more of a notch in my belt mentality where I just wanted to get my number up. I wanted to go out and bring someone back. And if I didn't bring someone back, that was a failure. And, you know, you're left with your right hand, and that was basically it. And so there was a point in my life where I had to go through a maturity phase where I came to see the value of monogamy and, you know, getting to a deeper personal level. Even if I'm not in a relationship, I'm not in a relationship right now. I'm single, and it's much more fun to me now. And I feel much more fulfilled when I'm actually getting to know someone. And I'm not just trying
connection.
To get, yeah, not just trying to get to their pants and, you know, once you're done, like, that's it, like on to the next. I feel like it's much more fun to have conversations and get to deeper levels and go through good times, like piss each other off, like agree on stuff, disagree on stuff. Like, that's all really fun to me now in ways that I wasn't allowing to develop earlier on in my life, like especially from 18 to 23, 24.
Yeah. And I think that's a process of maturation that most guys end up going through sooner or later, is you're channeling all of this sexual energy into whatever will take it for a while, and then eventually realize that that's maybe not the most fulfilling way of going about it, and start to value an emotional connection a bit more. And you see that among pickup artists and all sorts too. I mean, almost everyone that is out there red pilling people and teaching people game and all that, they all end up in relationships eventually.
Yeah. I was one of those guys. I read The Game when I was in college. I was texting my friends about it too. Like,
I bet you had a field day with that shit.
Oh my God. I had a note app in my phone that I would try to, they gave pickup lines in the book that were, if you're not familiar with the pickup artist mentality, one of the mainstays in the pickup artist game, I guess, for whoever's listening, is negging, which is a backhanded compliment. So you'd say something to a girl like, oh, you know, my grandma has those color nails. Like, I love that color. And like, it's a nice, you're telling her it's a nice color. And also she has nails that remind you of your grandma. So it's like, are you complimenting me? Or are you not complimenting me? Like, what the fuck is going on? And it's like this whole power, it's based in like a power dynamic of you coming in and giving negs to a girl and then having her then try to prove herself to you. Like, you are the prize. And I do think that it's important to have self-confidence, but not in a manipulative way like the pickup artist game tries to do it. And I had a podcast with Dr. Taylor Burrows, who I also met through Twitter, and we talked about pickup artistry. And she said that one of the things that pickup artists fail to see, and they may not be concerned about this because if your goal is a one-night stand, you're not really concerned about the aftermath of that. But when you neg a girl, when you give her backhanded compliments, you're turning on the side of her brain that wants to be with you sexually and is attracted to you, but you're also turning on the neurotic part of her brain, the insecure part of her brain. So it's like you're winding this girl up, you're sleeping with her, and then you're sending her out into the world as more insecure and more neurotic. And you're just like starting this cycle. And when she said that, I was like, wow, like, I never even thought about that. Like,
that is some great perspective, man. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. And neuroticism is not something that we need more of in our women, in my estimation.
Yeah, she's basically like, you're winding them up. You're winding these girls up and then you're sending them out. And also, this shit doesn't work. The pickup artist shit does not work on, at least in my experience, like... And I wasn't like a pro where I was doing it like in the game where Neil Strauss is living with a bunch of pickup artists and it was like their full-time thing. I would just take some of these tips. And so it wouldn't work on girls that had high self-esteem and high self-confidence. Like, there had to be some sort of insecurity or neuroticism that you could exploit. And the girls with more insecurities, it would be more likely to feed into that kind of stuff. So you're attracting mates that are naturally insecure and don't have high self-esteem, which is a huge problem for long-term.
I think the biggest way of getting around that is becoming someone who legitimately is of really high value as well. When you become a man who is legitimately very high value, successful in business, successful socially, carries himself well, and uses things from the game and pickup artistry and whatever else and combine all that into one. And then I think it starts to work a lot better on some of those more high value women as well.
Yeah, that's one of
but
the
definitely
the
like a lot book. Of a lot of pickup artistry is just putting up a front, you know, kind of being anyone can go out there and be someone that they're not for a night.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I guess one of the positive things that has stayed with me through the game is thinking of yourself like as the prize. Like, you want to be confident. You don't want to have to prove your worth to someone else so they'll spend time with you. And then also being a high value male, not in the sense that you are manipulating women to sleep with you, but more of, I have indicators in my life that other successful and high value females recognize as high value. So like, you're financially stable, you can provide, you're physically fit, you're learning, you're smart, you read, you're in tune with what's happening to the world. You know, you're willing to experiment sexually with Carrezo, like that ties into it. So like, actually being high value and not just trying to present yourself through a manipulative filter is high value.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I guess this conversation has been amazing, and I think a good way to end off is I wrote down a conclusion and kind of my next step from what I want to take and kind of my takeaway from this book, and I kind of already got into that a little bit, but I wrote down here, I'm definitely going to cut down on orgasms, ideally 2 times per month. And my eyes were opened in a similar way to how meditation and fasting were open to me. Now that I've had the experience of adopting those two habits, I recognize the kind of like almost like the same hungriness to try something new. And the way that other people talk about Kareza reminds me of the way that people talk about meditation or IF before I started. Like, I thought they were dumb and stupid, and then later recognized that, yeah, some things may have been blown out of proportion or sensationalized, but the through line message of what those people were saying, there's a lot of truth to it. So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And I think that's a good perspective. It definitely sounds ridiculous at first. People talking about avoiding orgasm and that achieving greater harmony in their relationships. I mean, that is completely counterintuitive to what we've all been taught, which is essentially the more orgasms, the better in a relationship.
Yeah, the more the better. And by yourself,
so
too.
What you hear in Kareza, yeah, and by yourself too. And what we're hearing in Cupid's Poisoned Arrow is something that flies directly in the face of what most of us traditionally have believed. So it does sound ridiculous at first, but a useful principle that I've picked up on a long time ago now is look at what almost everybody else is doing and then do the opposite.
Yeah.
that's a pretty good philosophy in a lot of different things.
Yeah. And even going into a personal level, going off of the more general, see what the general population is doing and then do the opposite. I think a useful way to look at it is see where your urges are leading you and then do the opposite of your urges or go against them and to find longer fulfillment. I think that's been a through line for me. That's a pattern that I've noticed is that when I adopt certain habits that actively go against my urges, I feel a longer term fulfillment than just giving into my urges.
Urges are fundamentally a here and now, short term, I want this type thing. Whereas acting from a place of purpose, having like doing things that require discipline and avoiding that urge to just seek pleasure in the moment is absolutely more satisfying. I mean, your actions at that point are coming from a place of knowing what you want in life, and you're taking actions that are going to help move you in that direction. If you just give in to your urges all the time, you're just living for pleasure. And that makes life pretty hard after a while.
Yeah, man. Well, I just want to thank you again for hopping on the podcast. I'm sure this will be the first of many conversations we have on many different books and topics. And for people listening to this in the future, I hope the future is a place of health and return to wealth and normalcy and the good life after this whole pandemic washes through society, because we're still quarantining right now on almost a global level. But I hope that you're listening to this in a much better return to normal place than we are now. So, and yeah, thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Auxoro. If you haven't already, please hit us with a 5-star rating and comment on Apple Podcasts. This helps us appear higher in searches, which means more people will find out about Auxoro. Other ways to help get the word out is telling a friend, tagging us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, writing a blog post, or supporting us with a donation on Patreon. We are a completely independent platform, and we're grateful for every listener who supports this podcast. Thanks for coming along for the ride, and I'll see you guys next time.